From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Governor Rick Perry says the separation of church and state is a myth and the work of the devil.
President Obama and his cronies in Washington continue their efforts to remove any trace of religion from American life.
How uncertainty about the wind power tax credit is shaking up the wind industry in Texas and turning agriculture green with sustainable power.
Well, wineries are a great candidate for sustainability, both for generating its own electricity and rainwater and a lot of other things. It lends itself perfectly to the different principles of sustainability.
Support for Texas Matters is provided by the Institute of Texan Cultures, putting the Lone Star State's people, products, and ideas known around the world on display with the exhibit Made in Texas, now open. More at texancultures.com.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Even though Governor Rick Perry is no longer running for president, he's still on the presidential campaign trail. But now he's stumping as a surrogate for the GOP nominee for president, Mitt Romney. Perry has become the go-to guy in trying to shore up the support of the religious right wing of the Republican Party, a faction that's critical for Election Day success. This week, Perry addressed the religious right voters in a conference call as part of the 40 Days to Save America crusade, which seeks to warn the social conservatives about the dire consequences if President Barack Obama is reelected. In the conference call, Perry dismissed the separation of church and state as a myth.
Separation of church and state, which has been driven by the secularists to remove those people of faith from the public arena. I mean, there's nothing farther from the truth. I mean, when you think about our founding fathers and they created this country, our Constitution, the foundation of America upon Judeo-Christian values, biblical values, and this narrative that has been going on, particularly since the 60s, that somehow or another there's this, you know, steel wall, this iron curtain, whatever you want to call it, between the church and people of faith, and this separation of church and state is just false on its face. We have a biblical responsibility to be involved in the public arena, proclaiming God's truth, and that those are truly, you know, are we going to get up and say you are going to vote for X? No, but we're going to talk about Christian values. I mean, when you think about the issue of life and protecting life, and it's so important that we as Christians put legislation into place, that we elect men and women that defend life. The idea that we should be sent to the sidelines, I will suggest to you, is very driven by those who are not truthful. Satan runs across the world with his doubts and with his untruths and what have you. And one of the untruths out there that is driven is that people of faith should not be involved in the public arena. You think about what has gone on here in the last few days around the world, and never has there been a time that I think we need more spiritual courage, that we need more moral fiber, if you will. The American family is under siege. Traditional values, you know, somehow exclusionary. Simple prayer in our public schools is the basis for these secular attacks. And President Obama and his cronies in Washington continue their efforts to remove any trace of religion from American life. And it falls on us. I mean, we truly are, you know, Christian warriors, Christian soldiers, and it's for us as Americans to stand our ground and to firmly send the message to Washington that our nation is about more than just some secular laws and activist courts. You know, we see them chipping away at our values and remove so much that it is very special and unique about the United States. I don't want to get too far off course here, but when you think about what's going on in the Middle East and the president stood up in Cairo in 2009, and either by incredibly naive or very unschooled in the ways of these radical Islamists, and four Americans' lives were lost in Libya. It is our founding fathers knew and understood the importance and the role of our Creator in public discourse, and they didn't shy away from referencing, using the values He brought and the message of His Son Jesus Christ to build the system that we as a society have enjoyed for more than 200 years. Securing that system, rebuilding our nation, is what these 40 days to save America is really all about. About saving our nation, about preserving the values that make us special, about rejecting the concept that freedom of religion means freedom from religion.
That was Governor Rick Perry speaking in a conference call to religious right voters as part of the ground game in Mitt Romney's run for the White House. Perry joined the Reverend Rick Scarborough on the call to tout the upcoming crusade, 40 Days to Save America, which calls for God's intervention in the 2012 election. That audio comes from the website Right Wing Watch. To react to Perry's assertion that the separation of church and state is a myth and was not the intention of the nation's founding fathers, I spoke with Rob Boston from the organization Americans United for the Separation of Church and State.
Well, the religious right is an important part of the Republican base. And I think in this election year especially, there is some concern that they may not be terribly enthusiastic or that they might not turn out or that they might not even want to vote for a Mormon. So there are a number of people out there, political activists, working to get them fired up and active as we approach the November election.
And Governor Rick Perry was tapped for that role in the Romney campaign. And one of the items he kept hammering away at was that there is a myth in our country of a separation of church and state.
I think it's really sad when high-profile political leaders like Rick Perry attack the separation of church and state. It displays, a certain degree of ignorance, and also it's an attack on the founding principles, which normally a lot of conservatives claim to treasure. The separation of church and state is a principle that was devised in part by men like James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington. It goes back to the founding period. Both Jefferson and Madison spoke in their writings of the phrase separation of church and state or separation of religion from government. They used different phrases. But the point is that they believed that religious freedom could only flourish if we had this separation. They were not trying to be hostile toward religion or to shut religion down, but they truly believed that in the United States, we wouldn't make the mistake that had been made in European nations where religion and government were joined together and there was violence and war and conflict as a result.
Rick Perry underlines that there shouldn't be a separation of church and state, in, according to his view, and he also says that creating that separation or perpetuating the myth of a separation is the work of Satan, that Satan, quote, runs around the world with his doubt and with his untruths.
It is sometimes difficult to respond to some of the arguments that are used against separation of church and state because they are so incoherent. Claims that separation of church and state is satanic, for example. You hear that from some folks on the religious right or different language. And of course, these are the same people who are agitating for separation of religion and government in the Islamic world, who would love to see it imposed in Muslim nations. Also, I would ask those folks to consider this. When they argue that there should be no separation of church and state, what is the alternative? Some kind of merger of religion and government? Which religion? We have thousands of varieties of religion in the United States, even among Christianity. There is wide diversity from the very liberal denominations to the very conservative Christian denominations. When people say they don't want there to be a separation of church and state, I think what they're really saying is that they would like the government to endorse their particular religion. Rick Perry would probably not be very happy if the Christianity that the government chose to align itself with was of the liberal variety. He's talking about fundamentalism and conservative Christianity merging with the state.
Governor Perry also said, and this is a quote from his phone call, conference call with religious right leaders, President Obama and his cronies in Washington continue their efforts to remove any trace of religion from American life. I mean, could you fact check that? Is there any effort coming from Washington to remove any trace of religion from American life?
Well, I always find it amusing when claims are made that the government is on some sort of vendetta against religion or the Obama administration or any other government official. If you look at the situation in the country right now, you see something that's a lot different. The Obama administration, for example, continues to pour millions of dollars into the coffers of religious groups under the Faith-Based Initiative, which was a program, actually it goes back to the Clinton years, but it was really refined by President George W. Bush. And Obama didn't shut that down. He's continued it, so he's directly funding religious organizations with taxpayer money. That doesn't sound like a war on religion. The president has done nothing to try to remove religious symbols from public property. I don't hear him attacking In God We Trust on the money. He's not trying to get under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. There are many examples of what scholars call civil religion that are very common in our political life. And, of course, the president isn't trying to take any of those things away.
Another quote from Perry, it is our founding fathers' view, and they understood the importance of the role of our Creator in public discourse, and they didn't shy away from that, from referencing him. So, I mean, this was a part of the founding fathers' view of the world, and so it's integral to way of life.
I find that there is a lot of rewriting of American history in this area. The founders did oftentimes talk about the Creator. They talked about, in George Washington's case, the supreme architect of the universe. They use phrases that sometimes sound a little strange to today's ears because they weren't specifically Christian. They were more deistic, deism being a religious philosophy that was sort of in vogue at the time of the founders. It invoked a God that sort of set the universe in motion but then stepped away from it. It's not a very popular religion these days, but it was at the time of the founders. So the language that they tended to use wasn't specifically Christian. It was deistic. And actually, if you look at our Constitution, which is the governing document for the nation, it is wholly secular. It contains no references to God, Jesus Christ. It doesn't single out Christianity. It doesn't even mention Christianity. So when I hear politicians like Rick Perry or others talk about the so-called religious roots of the nation, what they're really doing is wish fulfillment. They're trying to retroactively baptize the founding fathers and turn them into conservative evangelical Christians. But they simply weren't that way. In Thomas Jefferson's case, for example, he didn't believe in the divinity of Jesus. He didn't believe in the miracles of the Bible. He didn't believe in the virgin birth. He didn't believe in a lot of Christian doctrine. I think many Americans would be surprised today if they were to find out how far removed some of our founding fathers were from conventional Christian beliefs.
So Rick Perry has this conference call with these religious right leaders. I mean, this is not up front on a podium in front of thousands of people. This is kind of subterranean politicking that's going on here. So why is it down the down low? Why isn't this up front in front of, on C-SPAN?
Well, a lot of this is simply political. The messages that resonate with religious conservatives and fundamentalists often don't resonate with other Americans. Right now, Americans are telling pollsters that their main concerns are things like the economy, jobs, the stock market, what type of a country our children are going to be living in. Is it going to be economically sound? Can we compete in the world economy? These are the types of pocketbook issues that most people are interested in. The religious right, on the other hand, obsesses over social issues, legal abortion, same-sex marriage, religion in public schools, creationism and evolution. And because these issues, these social issues, don't necessarily resonate with larger numbers of voters, candidates and politicians and political activists are sometimes very wary about stressing them. So they will look for a way to mobilize the base that is excited by the social issues without turning off other voters who really are going to be the ones, the sort of mainline voters, are going to be the ones that call this election, not religious conservatives.
Rob Boston is a spokesperson for Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. He's reacting to a recent conference call conducted by Governor Rick Perry, which called that separation a myth and the work of Satan. Texas has long been an energy generator for the nation. Oil and natural gas from Texas is critical for America to achieve energy independence, and add to the mix, wind. Drive through West Texas, parts of the coast up to the Panhandle, and you'll see countless giant turbines majestically cranking out power for the grid, while adding jobs and income to rural Texas. The sky is the limit for Texas wind power, but gridlock in Washington, D.C. is putting a glitch in our get-along for future wind farm developments. The problem is the soon-to-expire wind power tax credit. Ellen Carey is a spokesperson for the American Wind Energy Association.
The federal production tax credit for wind energy does indeed expire at the end of this year, and it has been an effective tool to keeping electricity rates low and encourage the development of wind energy. You know, wind is 35% of all new power electric generation in the U.S. today, and not only that, but it's also been a manufacturing success story where we are increasing and insourcing our wind component manufacturing.
So if Congress takes no action by the end of the year and this tax credit is blown away, what kind of impact would that have on the industry, particularly in Texas, where wind energy is playing a bigger and bigger role?
You know, David, it's absolutely crucial that we extend the production tax credit as soon as possible. What's happening right now is, without the certainty, going into 2013, developers are not placing orders into the supply chain and into the manufacturing facilities, the nearly 500 manufacturing facilities in 43 states that rely on those orders to make the component parts and so that they can keep humming and churning out these big parts. So it's absolutely critical. 37,000 jobs lay on the line, and we will continue to see layoffs happen in the industry as the PTC expiration looms.
But how does the tax credit actually work? How does this benefit people who are going to invest in these giant wind farms that we see in Texas?
Well, let me start with the investment part. This is an industry that invests over $15 billion in private investment each year. So a wind developer decides he wants to build a project. He sites it. He measures the wind resource. He builds it, and he buys the turbines, and he has to come online and be producing power to even apply for the 2.2 cents per kilowatt hour produced tax relief that he gets once he's fully online and has invested all those dollars. So really, that's what that expiration means, is that all these projects have to be built online, producing power connected to the grid by the end of this year in order to qualify for the production tax credit.
They have to put in this infrastructure. There's also a lot of people who go to school to be certified to work on these wind farms. And if there's a disruption, then that job that they expected to be there won't be there.
Yeah, this week, in the last couple of weeks, we have seen more layoff announcements at our manufacturing facilities, particularly the major component manufacturers, folks making big towers and big blades and big turbines. And so we're going to continue, unfortunately, very sadly, we're going to continue to see layoffs without certainty and without Congress taking action and extending the PTC.
Congress is not really known for getting anything done these days, so particularly I guess you're going to expect the lame duck Congress to come back after the November election and maybe take action on this. That's the plan?
The hope is always to get it done as soon as possible and to give that certainty as quickly as possible to the business, the wind industry businesses that are making very tough decisions today.
But it's really hard for a big business to decide they're going to invest millions of dollars for further development in an area that they don't know for sure what Congress is going to do. Is that the problem?
Absolutely, David, and I think you're talking about it in the general sense, because that's a general statement that can apply to any business, not just wind. You know, you need certainty. You need to be able to project into one year out and 5 years out so you can invest those dollars. You know, since 2005, the wind, in 2005, we made 25% of our component parts here. Today, we make nearly 70% here because we've had some certainty over the last 7 years where companies have been able to decide to invest and come to the U.S., build a factory, take folks on, be making the parts here, invest the millions, billions of dollars into this industry.
And so how long do you think the industry is going to need this tax credit? When will it be totally self-sufficient?
Well, we've always said we won't need it forever. And, the PTC has been extended in 1, 2, 3-year increments, and we've had to come back and prove our case, and we have. And this is an industry that has proven its case for reasons that we've talked about of going insourcing our domestic content, building more manufacturing facilities, and dropping our cost of our turbines and producing affordable power. So we've always said we won't need it forever, but we need a one-year extension for now to get us until we can talk about what more comprehensive tax reform looks like.
Ellen Carey is the spokesperson for the American Wind Energy Association. Wind energy is just one example of how rural Texas is embracing high-tech sustainable energy. Next weekend, September 29th and 30th, the Renewable Energy Roundup and Green Living Fair will be held in Fredericksburg, Texas, to show off other green energy-saving methods and hold workshops. Gary McKibben is implementing these methods on his winery in Meridian, Texas, and he'll participate in the Renewable Energy Roundup.
Well, wineries are a great candidate for sustainability, both for generating its own electricity and rainwater and a lot of other things. It lends itself perfectly to the different principles of sustainability. First of all, we generate a peak load during the hottest part of the year, so that makes it ideal for generating your own electricity, because the rest of the year it's rather low and flat, and we can contribute back to the grid. And then for irrigation for your vineyards, it's collecting rainwater. Since our buildings are usually large, we have a lot of roof area, so we can collect rainwater, and that's, of course, sustainable. And then our cooling loads are really high, so we lend ourselves perfectly to using geothermal. And there's a lot of wineries in the country right now, especially in Texas, that are using all three of those principles.
Well, explain to me how geothermal works in an area that's not, doesn't have steam coming out of the ground.
Okay, geothermal it's commonly referred to as a ground source heat pump. Instead of exchanging the heat and dissipating it into the air, into the atmosphere, we take that heat and put it in the earth. So technically, we're heating up the earth, and at the same time, we're bringing back cooler water, because it's a natural exchange. It's a solid exchange. And the good thing about that is during the winter, we reverse that cycle, and we go back and we extract the heat from the earth that we put there during the summer, and the system works. It works in opposite. So it's a closed-loop system, and we're just circulating water, and instead of dissipating that heat into the atmosphere, we're dissipating it into the earth.
So is there like a network of pipes underground? Okay.
Yes, there is. We drill wells, and the wells are just very simple, about 4-inch wells, and we put a ground loop in it for the water, and it's manifolded, and depending on how many tons you have or the requirement for your cooling determines the numbers of wells that you drill. And the rule of thumb in our area with our geology is about one well per ton, about 250 feet deep. And works very well. I've had my first system in for 9 years and have not had a problem with it.
This technology that you're using for renewable energy systems, it doesn't have to be for wineries. It could be for any homestead.
Yes, it It could be for any building that requires cooling, because it's, you know, the ductwork and the control side of it is the same as a standard unit, but the unit itself is different, and then the wells replace the compressors on the outside of your building, any external. And the other beautiful thing about geothermal is there's no equipment on the outside of your building. There's no rooftop units. There's no units sitting on the ground. It's quiet, and you don't see the wells, of course, and it's all – in fact, we have a parking lot and a lawn built over our wells at the winery, and it's completely out of sight. And you get a much better guarantee on your wells. The piping is guaranteed for about 50 years. So it's a very efficient unit. I've been using geothermal since 1967. I'm an architect and designing wineries, and it's been a very, very functional, very smooth, adequate system for all different building types.
Have you noticed an attitude shift since 1967 when this was really on the fringe? But now, I just got back from a long drive through the Panhandle, and I just saw miles and miles, a zillion giant wind turbines. And that's out there cranking electricity and cranking money. People are realizing this is a sustainable way and a better way to live than just taking resources out of the ground and not being able to pull them back in. Men and women of the range used to turn their nose up at that, but now it's part of life.
Yes, it is. And people are, if nothing else, people are very aware of it. There's still people that are skeptical about it just because it's new to a lot of people. But when you really get into the nuts and bolts of it, it is a very common sense, logical way to cool heat and provide energy for your building. And it's constantly going to be changing. I built a house in 1967 in California that had solar on it and solar water heating and a geothermal unit and all that. And from that point to now, it was like the dark ages. The equipment is so sophisticated now and so much more efficient. And everybody, all the manufacturers are jumping into the product lines, and they just keep getting better and better. Every time I talk to somebody, it's they're coming out with a new system that's better than the previous one. And the one thing that's really changing are the batteries and the electrical systems. The electrical systems are becoming very efficient. In fact, we're in process of converting part of our winery over to 48 volts, and we'll be going off the grid because the 48-volt systems now are so efficient, and the equipment and lights and switchgear and everything is readily available, that we're really excited about that, and we're just now starting that project.
Gary McKibben is an architect and owns the Red Caboose Winery in Meridian, Texas. He'll be a featured speaker at the Renewable Energy Roundup and Green Living Fair, which is September 29th and 30th in Fredericksburg, Texas. There's more information online at theroundup.org. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org, and you can subscribe to the free podcast on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for Texas Matters is provided by the Institute of Texan Culture's Made in Texas exhibit.